Hey everyone, welcome back. I am in my bedroom again, not the studio, so just let's get it out of the way. You're probably going to hear the bus coming and going in the background. I'm going to do my best to edit it out, but you know what? We love public transportation here on Beyond the Bedroom. I'm going to go on the record and say it. Famously a friend of the show, the DC bus system, right? So I apologize, but also I don't, because I'm so comfy and cozy in my bedroom right now. And I love doing these little cozy episodes because they just feel a little bit more special. You know, we're just talking, we're just chatting. It's just me and you. Okay. Look at me. It's just me and you. Okay. You guys tend to really love these cozy little episodes, which is really funny because I put so much more effort into the studio episodes, but I don't know, maybe the secret sauce is doing them from my room. Maybe the studio has to be my room, you know? Actually, it sounds like a nightmare. I would much rather leave my house and do this maybe this summer when I'm in New York. Who knows? Time will tell. But anyway, I'm really cozy, and some of you told me that you listen to the episode and then you re-listen to it later to like help you fall asleep, which, listen, I'm not mad about it, okay? In fact, I'm flattered. If you are cozy in your little bed right now listening to me, that's so cute and I love it, and I hope you sleep really well, okay? What if I just started screaming nightmare? You know, I'm tempted. But I'm not going to. Anyway, maybe I can influence you like psychologically in your sleep. That could also be. Anyway, oh God, now I'm giving everyone, I'm creeping everyone out. Okay, so this was quite the week for sexual and reproductive health in the news. I mean, even just today, it was the Mifepristone Pristone case and then Diddy being raided for sex trafficking charges, which that comes as no surprise to anybody who worked in clubs in New York City at any time in the past like 20 years, even like 30 years. It's just crazy. I'm very happy that Cassie came forward, his ex, and I have a feeling that that kind of got things going, but I wanted to bring it up because I want to let you know that the sex news roundups are coming back to my newsletter. I stopped because I didn't think you guys liked them that much, but then I heard a lot of, hey, where did this go? What's going on? I need to read it. So I'm starting it again. So if you like breakdowns of sexual health topics, sex in the news, or things like that, you can subscribe to me there. It is birna.substack.com. So that's birna.substack.com. I said my own name really weird. I go back and forth between being like, okay, my name in Icelandic is Birna. Birna. You heard Saga say it probably on that episode. But in America, people say Birna, which never really feels right coming out of my mouth, but works for me. And then most of the people close to me call me B. It's kind of funny that newer friends like don't call me B. And I'm always like, am I in trouble? Like when they're like, hey, Birna. And I'm like, oh my God, I've been found out. But anyway, yeah, that's, you can find me there, birna.substack.com. And in some personal news, I've been working on a project with my husband that I am so excited to share with all of you. You have no idea. Some of you might have a little inkling about this one. It's very special. I love working with him. We just have so much, you know, fun when we work together. And I'm just really excited to collaborate again. And I don't know, it's just, it's a good time all around. And it's like all our projects are our little children already. So, oh, by the way, I should probably make it very clear. By project, I mean like an actual sex ed project, not a sex tape. That is a miscommunication on my part in the past, and I should probably clarify again in case any very horny people misinterpret and are refreshing my site over and over looking for one. Sorry, it's not gonna happen. But this episode, I asked my friends, my sweet, lovely friends, about some topics. I wanted to see what the people closest to me were chatting about, what they were talking about, and, you know, I'm not really going to follow a very formal script for this one. We're just chatting. Like I said, it's just me and you. So I am also using the term friends loosely here, not because I hate these people, but because a lot of them are also just internet friends, like mutuals, like not people I know very well. So don't go like snooping around trying to figure out who said what. I promise you, it's also some like random man from Missouri that I've met once who's like in college that like I've been following. Like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. But anyway, it feels kind of like having a girlfriend that goes to another school when I'm like, it's my internet friends, my mutuals. It's like they're real, I swear. But anyway, I want to make a little special episode about what they are thinking about, what they are chatting about. Okay, so this first one comes from this guy who I'm mutuals with that is a cutie pie, and I love when he sends me in questions because they're always good. So he goes, when I was about 26, I was fooling around with someone and told her, you're such a tease. And she educated me about how saying that implies that she owes me something. Ergo, it's not a fun or funny or playful thing to say. So can we chat about, I don't know, antiquated flirtation? Yes, I love to talk about this, not because I'm a sociology nerd, but also because it's... it's just so telling of like how things have changed in society. I forget how old he is. He's like in his early 30s. And so, you know, it's not been that long since this was a thing that people said. And also, I mean, people say it still, but it's like we're more like, I don't know if it was ever okay, but it's like we're more empowered to say, hey, like that's not a cool thing to say, because it's like you are saying I'm a tease, but like, what am I teasing? Like, what am I taking away? Or like, what am I hiding from you? Or like, what is there that I'm going to be revealing to you, you know? And it does kind of put the feeling, it does kind of imply that there is something more, or that like, hey, don't tease me or else, you know? And not saying that that's always what happens, but it's also that feeling where it's like, oh, like you're trouble or you're teasing me, like stuff like that gets thrown around a lot. And so I also want to just talk about things that we can just in general stop doing. Obviously, there's caveats here. If you think this is like the hottest thing ever, go ahead, do your thing. Who am I to stop you? You know, go out there and live your best life and have the best sex you can. But I'm not giving you like a cease and desist order here. All right. So I'm more so just giving you the yellow card on the field. Okay. That's just think about it like that. But saying things like you're such a tease, you're tempting me, when you don't have that type of relationship, especially if like, oh my God, like if you haven't hooked up yet at all and you're like, oh, like you're tempting me, like I'm just going to take it. Uh-uh. Nope. Incredibly wrong sounding buzzer. Just no. That one's crazy. That's not at all the same thing as just like, oh, like you're such a tease, but that one, now they're in like red zone territory, right? But my thing that I see all the time, especially older guys saying this, like 40 and above, they love this. They go, oh, you're trouble. What? I feel like every time someone goes, you're trouble, it's like they're married. You know what I mean? What do you mean? What? Are you gonna lose control? Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. That to me is so icky. That's a personal ick, okay? You guys get a glimpse at my personal icks. Then again, someone else might be super turned on by this. This is kind of the episode, let's say it like this. It's kind of an episode where, yeah, I might be a little judgy. And what about it? Okay? In my day-to-day life as a sex educator, I've been through the sexual attitude reassessment. I go through all the stuff. Sometimes when people in my personal life are doing weird things, I'm gonna judge, okay? If some guy is telling me, oh, you're trouble, because he bought me a drink at a bar, that one seems to be an ick for a lot of people, because I asked my friends and they were like, yeah, don't love that. Just this whole thing of like the push-pull dynamic, that's not what I'm talking about, because that can be really hot. And especially if you already have established that relationship where it's like, you know, come on, like, you know, that type of thing. But if you're saying, come on, like, I need it, like, don't be such a tease, like, that's going into coercive territory. And that's why it feels icky to people. Because I hear this a lot. I hear this a lot where people will go, well, if it's an attractive person, then it won't be coercive. And I'm like, no, no. And I think it's one thing if you've established that relationship with each other, and you are flirting, going back and forth in that banter, and you've established that relationship where there's that closeness and there is a level of trust, that's different. And you have established that this is a dynamic that you enjoy. If you're outside of that, if you haven't established that and you're saying these things, like, that can be coercive. So let's just not do that anymore. But while we are on the topic, I know I've talked about this before, but like, can we also stop, like, during sex doing kinky shit without discussing it? And it's like so weird, like slapping, pulling, choking without discussing it first, or like asking permission, just like 0 to 60. I keep seeing this discussion. I don't know. I just want it to happen and I don't want it to be awkward. Sure, there's a chance where that could be super hot for someone, and it could be a mood killer. If you are asking them, like, you want it here, you want it like that, you know, which by the way, like, that's a cool way to ask for consent, whatever. But you know what else is a mood killer? Getting slapped in the face by someone during sex when you were not expecting or wanting it. I've heard enough of those stories and it's fucking weird. So I think it's time we move on. On a lighter note, here are some other things that we can re-examine, because I think that we should probably know better by now. And I surveyed some friends and here's what they came up with. So I did not realize how common this one was. Initiating sex by poking someone's boobs or just starting to fondle their breasts, like just poke at them. I thought my friends were kidding. What is that about? I guess, like, there's people obviously where that's their dynamic and that's something that they've agreed upon. But if you're doing that in lieu of communication, do you see what I'm saying? Like, you've never discussed it. You've never agreed upon that being like an initiation. And I'm not talking about like a caress or whatever. I'm talking about poking. And like, I was like, what? It is, has the same kind of vibe as a toddler, you know, if you know, you know. And I guess I'm lucky not to have this happen with any long-term partners, but I do remember actually, there was a time where this person I was very briefly seeing, probably for obvious reasons, did do that. And it was so, I was like, what are you, what? It gets annoying very quickly. And yes, it does give toddler vibes. For sure. Some other things that I think are kind of weird are also getting like grumpy if somebody doesn't want to do something in bed or gives you criticism. Ugh, no. No, thank you. Weird. And people sometimes see this as a thing where people are flirting. Like, they're like, oh, that's a flirty behavior. And I'm not talking about like being bratty. I'm talking about genuinely, like, I don't know. I feel like the coercive environment is so prevalent that a lot of people will internalize this feeling and will start to think that it's hot. It's unhealthy, I guess, or it can be harmful. Let me say it like that. It can be harmful. If you start to think it's hot when someone doesn't want you, when it's like kind of a turnoff if they're into you and want you, that is something that you can maybe re-examine. And I'm not talking about certain kink dynamics. I'm literally talking about like when people want to be with someone and the person is like, no, get away with me. And that like turns you on more. No, that's maybe something you should re-examine, right? There's something there that I think I see this frequently also in relationships where, not in my personal relationships, but just like in general, where people will be like, I am so into this person. I'm so fascinated by them. I'm just infatuated by them. And they're kind of hard to get. And then once they get them, they're like, oh, I don't want them anymore. And it's like, that's a common thing, right? But specifically when it's about sex, where it's almost like it turns someone on the more someone doesn't want something to happen. And it's not like an agreed upon scenario or a dynamic that they play with. It's just to the point where them wanting them back would turn them off. That's something where I'm like, no, I think that we have gotten some wires crossed there. You know what I mean? And I'm really tired of like not discussing that, because I think it is really important to talk about that. There are people where they think that that is like the epitome of like flirting, of being like, no, like you're not allowed to say no. And it's like, if you want something and you feel like you can't get it, if you say that you want it, then what's the point? You know, I don't know. But again, like I said, not talking about specific dynamics that you play with. I'm just talking about in general. Other antiquated flirting things that we can let go. Asking for a Snapchat at like your grown age. Oh my God. Like instead of asking for someone's number at a bar, you're like, what's your Snapchat? Aren't you 34 years old? What do you mean, what's my Snapchat? Next? Crazy. What's my Snapchat? Oh my God. It's fine to talk on Snapchat, but I don't know. Something about that gives me the ick. Am I crazy? Is that a normal thing to do? Maybe I'm being a little too judgmental. I don't know. But instead of asking for someone's number or even social media or anything, before maybe even knowing their name, being like, what's your Snap? Just ask for nudes. You know, just go up to the bar and be like, can I take a picture of your titties? Like, why not? Like, that's the vibe it gives me. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. Okay, someone else goes, why do I, as a gay man, need to use condoms if I'm on PrEP? Herpes doesn't scare me and other things are cured with antibiotics. I just don't understand why the sudden push for condoms all the time. Can you please enlighten me why I'm being bombarded with urges to wrap it up? Okay, well, I urge you to wrap it up for a lot of reasons. So this came from a mutual of mine, and it was asked publicly, so it's not like a big deal that I'm saying it's someone I know. Why as a gay man do you need to use condoms if you are on PrEP? So, well, like you said, there's other things, like there's HPV and herpes that can cause, from skin-to-skin contact, that can cause warts or sores, you know? But if you're not scared of those, because, I mean, technically, you know, they're well managed, they can be very painful and very, very irritating to people. I think most people wouldn't want to experience them, especially I've heard the first outbreak of genital herpes can be quite painful, but it's not a life-threatening issue. Like, they are skin conditions. They're not life-threatening. So I understand, like, they don't necessarily scare you, right? And I'm not going to fear-monger about them. Of course not. But you're also saying, and you know, there's other things are cured with antibiotics. So I do want to talk about that because I've talked about this before. Antibiotic resistance is something that we're seeing pretty frequently now. I don't want to say frequently. Let me choose my words very carefully. Sometimes when I'm sitting here alone, kind of waxing poetic about STIs, I get a little lost in the sauce, all right? But not frequently, but we're seeing recurrent, this is a recurrent issue, okay? Where, especially with gonorrhea, there are some antibiotic resistant strains of it, and it's really tough, right? What's the likelihood that you're going to get the antibiotic resistant strain of gonorrhea right now? I mean, it's pretty unlikely, but that doesn't mean it's not impossible. But also, we don't want to keep contributing to this, right? But also, syphilis cases are on the rise, and it's not something you necessarily want to be consistently doing. You know, you don't want to just be like, oh, it's chlamydia again. Just, you know, that's the common one that people always talk about. Sure, chlamydia, for example, is really easy to treat, relatively easy, right? It's a course of antibiotics, but you don't want to be having these recurrent infections. You don't want to be getting chlamydia like 6 times in a year, right? You definitely don't want to. That's insane that would happen. But like, let's say 5 times over the course of 3 years. Yes, you're probably going to get rid of it each time with the course of antibiotics, but could it get harder to treat? Yeah. Do you really want to be on that medication all the time? You know, like, no. Antibiotics are amazing. They are life-saving. They are incredible. But they do have some irritating side effects. And it's like, if you don't need to be taking them all the time, why would you want to, right? So what's the likelihood that that's going to happen to you? Like I said, you know, if you're taking precautions, you're getting tested. But condoms are also important for those moments where you know, you might not show symptoms. And so you're having multiple sex partners, right? You have a bacterial infection. You haven't shown symptoms yet, because the most common symptom of an STI is no symptoms at all. And so you don't get tested for another couple weeks. And then at that point, you've maybe spread it to a couple people. It's just one of those things that it is kind of our responsibility, not just to ourselves, but to the people we're having sex with. If you're having multiple partners, you have to think about them too, right? You don't always know your status. You can't get tested every day, nor should you. There's also some things that take a little while to develop and like would show up on a test. Like you can't always go like, you know, 2 days later and everything shows up on the test. So you should be getting tested regularly, and with new partners, you should be wrapping it up, but I'm not going to tell you what to do. If you feel like you're taking proper precautions, like with prep, with getting tested, this is a personal decision to make. But the reason that you're getting bombarded with urges to wrap it up is because people like me are reading reports from my field about super gonorrhea and syphilis cases rising and infertility from chlamydia. And we're like, oh man, just put a condom on, you know? So I think that's where maybe some of that that is coming from. So another one of my friends asked me, is it a kink? Do I want an open relationship? Or do I really have the urge to cheat on my partner? What is going on? This one's really interesting because this person has been in an open relationship before and still kind of felt like it just wasn't enough. And when I asked what that meant by that, like, what do you mean not enough? It's like the feeling of everything being so smooth and out in the open kind of took the excitement out of everything. And I'm going to preface this by saying what I always say. I'm not a sex therapist, but this is not my platform here to therapize you. I'm going to be just sharing my experiences like if I were telling my friend this. The stuff that I tell my friends with my expertise or experience in sex ed and in sexual and reproductive health, but also as a person who's been through things and been through relationships, right? Here's my take on this. And like I said, it's not necessarily scientific, but if you can replicate the situation with a partner, it may just be a kink, right? You can role play with a partner, pretend to be strangers, or this person, like open up your relationship and have this idea like, oh, I want to do something I don't do regularly with my partner. And it's creating the illusion of cheating, even though you're not. And it's enough for them, right? Role playing as other people or another dynamic, using blindfolds, waiting games, wearing dick extenders to make it feel like someone else, right? Wearing wigs and costumes. If you can kind of recreate that scenario and it's just as hot to you and sexy to you and full of arousal and excitement, that's a kinky thing. But when is it not? It's not really a kink, like the way we use that word to describe sexual activities that we enjoy that are perhaps out of the norm. When it becomes maybe something more of a pathology, right? Or even a paraphilic thing. And I don't like either of those terms for the negative connotation, but that's a good way to describe it. If it's getting to the point where you can only get really turned on when you're doing something you know you're not supposed to be doing, when the arousal is dependent on doing something you're not supposed to be doing, when the arousal is dependent on knowing you're hurting your partner, knowing you're going behind their back, when your arousal is not necessarily dependent on being naughty, right? Like that's not part of it. I'm saying when you don't have any desire to have sex with your partner anymore, and you are only interested in having sex in a dynamic where you know something is wrong, it might be that you are actually depending on the stress in order to chase the release of sex, because you're using sex to ground yourself or to regulate your nervous system. You're creating a stressful situation in order to cause the release. I personally don't like to use the term sex addiction. I like to use the more, like the consensus here is more terms like sexual out of control behavior or out of control sexual behavior, sexually compulsive behavior. I do believe often that this is a compulsion where, and again, not a therapist. This is just my two cents on this one. I do believe, though, that there is often a compulsive need to create situations to react to. It's similar in some instances of when people start to notice that they're dependent on drug use or alcohol use, or not a specific drug, but just in general, like going out and partying, for example. They will chase those like stressful situations in order to be like, whoa, I had such a stressful day. I deserve a break. I deserve to go party. And I think that is something that happens with sex as well, where if it's just not feeling enough for you, it's probably because you're not getting that like release. And because it's just different hormonal release at play, often dependent on how much of how much stress is involved for some people. But yeah, I mean, that's something you can definitely work through and investigate and look at yourself and really notice it. But if you're not able to replicate it with people or like with, you know, your partner, it's not maybe about the cheating. It's not maybe about the idea that you're doing something wrong. It's maybe that doing something wrong in reality is a stressful situation which arouses you and therefore you can release. Or maybe it's just that the arousal has to be dependent on stress. And that could be the case for a lot of people too. But I think people do like to role play. People do like to have open relationships too. And it's important to make that distinction of also if you are into something, and this may not go over well, but if you are into something that you know is causing harm to your partner, sometimes we have to weigh that, you know, which thing is more important to us, right? And that can be a tough decision to make. But I think people will try to validate this need and people will try to rationalize it to themselves. And in this instance, I'm not going to make that decision for somebody. But, you know, they asked a question about if it's a kink or if it's not, and I hope I answered it. Okay, I got a really great one about prostate play. Just a general question, like, can we talk about it? So many guys don't know what their prostate does, don't know what it is, and that it feels really good when you touch it. So I can do like a whole episode on a deep dive, and I have talked about pegging and anal play and prostate play. Like, I've talked about all of this in the past, but I want to give a little blurb about it, right? So first off, what does the prostate do? So the prostate is this little gland that you can see it and hear about it. You can see it on my Instagram, actually, on one of my videos about the epididymis, but you can hear about it in my episode that I did all about sperm. But it's a small gland, and the tubes that bring the semen from the testes up out of, you know, the penis, it passes through the prostate. The prostate creates most of the fluid. There's also, you know, bulbourethral glands and things like that, that, you know, seminal fluid and all that, but it creates most of the fluid that the sperm will swim around in. And I've always heard it described from a old reproductive physiology professor as a warm bath for your sperm cells. And I've really enjoyed that terminology because that's really what it is. It's this warm, nutritious bath for your sperm cells to swim around in, and it thins it out a little bit, these enzymes that are in there. Anyway, your prostate is very sensitive because it has an important job to do, and it's also connected to other structures like your urethra and your bladder and the base of your penis, the root of your penis, which is inside of the body. And when I say connected to, it means like when you kind of press on it, these other places may start to feel things as well. So that's why it's also kind of a fun spot to touch for a lot of people, because it just kind of creates a broader sensation of pleasure to the genital region. So how do you get there? You go through the rectum. Yep, the back door. You don't have to go very far. Some people it's right at the entrance, like a little, maybe like an inch or two in. Some people it's a little bit further, but some people feel it more if you press a little bit down to the side. Some people feel it more if you press with your knuckle down, but overall, you should be able to feel the pressure just with a little. And some people can have an orgasm without even touching their penis by just touching and stimulating their prostate. Some people also, by the way, they have to tap kind of upwards in order to find it once they're in there, but it's not really above the, it's not really above. It is kind of more diagonally below, but I can do the whole diagram thing when you guys have a visual medium. I'm sure you guys can also Google, you know, and if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure you already kind of know the general area, right? So we hear about this thing called prostate milking a lot, but it's really just an orgasm. It's just an ejaculation. Some people can ejaculate without an orgasm if they have a penis. It's not something you need to learn how to do. It's not something that's like, is this whole like incredible experience that like you have to unlock and like biohack your way through. If you're able to do it, that's cool. If you're not, it's okay. Like, I hate this orgasm hierarchy. I don't like the hierarchy of ejaculation either. I think if you want to set these goals for yourself, that's great, but it's not necessarily anything more or less special than anything else. So just figure that out for yourself and figure out what feels good and try to find that and chase that, right? So like I said, it is this organ, and you're not tapping the organ itself, you're actually touching the mucous membrane inside of you that will then put pressure on it. There's no way to kind of like scratch the prostate or anything. A lot of people think it lives like in the anus. That's not true. It's you're just kind of putting pressure on it through another organ, which is kind of cool that we're able to do that, right? But yeah, like I said, some people can ejaculate many people can ejaculate by just stimulating the prostate, which is not necessarily pegging or anal sex, like penetrative sex. It can also just be one or two fingers, sometimes just one finger. Some people feel it if they just put pressure on the perineum, like between the balls and the anus. If you like press up with your thumb and like kind of hook a little bit and then press diagonally, that can definitely put some pressure on it. In general, you're kind of compressing the area, so it's more likely to put pressure on it. There are some people that have issues with their prostate. It doesn't feel good when they touch it. And I'm not talking about just older men, because that can be something that happens, like in a large prostate. I'm talking about just people who may have pelvic floor issues or chronic prostate inflammation. These things I feel are very underdiagnosed in men. A lot of guys have old sports injuries and they just, you know, pull their groin, and then years later they're still in a lot of pelvic pain because of those myofascial knots. So it is something that is not for everyone, not just because it's like icky or whatever, but some people just, it doesn't really feel that good. But if you are going to be touching the prostate, you want to be using lube on that finger. You want to be able to also relax, and you want to be aroused before you go in there. It's not going to feel great if you're just trying to shove something up there, okay? You want to be aroused, you want to be ready for it, and you want to welcome it slowly. Go at a glacial pace. It's not really the same necessarily as fingering a vagina. It's very different in terms of, well, it's a different organ that you're touching. And also it tends to be really difficult sometimes. One of my friends told me that she thinks, she was like, well, if guys want to have anal sex with me, I should be able to do that to them first. And I just think that's really funny. Like, I love that she said that, because I was like, damn, you know what? You kind of have a point. But obviously people are allowed to draw their own boundaries for themselves and their bodies, yada, yada, you know. But I just thought that was funny to share. But it is really different, I think. And I think a lot of people penetrate others differently after they've been penetrated. One of my friends told me that he had sex with his girlfriend the same way for a really long time. And then they decided to get into pegging. And now he goes like so just differently with penetration. He like really makes sure she's like super ready for it, and he goes way slower. And so I was like, huh, maybe she did have a point, you know? I don't know. But it is one of those things that people get kind of icky about, because it involves the anus and the rectum, right? These are things that are dirty, and not like, ooh, dirty, but like also, you know, people are like, do I have to douche first? And I've talked about douching before. It's a personal choice, right? It's not as scary as people think it is. Just really quick tip, use lukewarm or room temperature water. Don't use cold water. Don't go too far. Put some lube on the end of it. And when I say don't go too far, like if you do squirt water far enough, you'll start to get cramps. So don't do that. But if you're putting one finger up, like just a little rinse will do it. You can also just wear a finger cot or something, you know, people do that. I love how they're sometimes called like the lesbian condom, which I'm like, I don't know, most lesbians that are protecting their fingers and vaginas, they're just using those black gloves. I used to have a box of those in my nightstand because I was seeing a girl who always got her nails done and she had those little rhinestones on them and I was so scared one of them would like fall off into my vagina. So I kept the box of gloves. But it felt really nice. I don't know. Sometimes I think about that and I'm like, that was a good call. But anyway, off topic, you can just do that, right? But yeah, I think it is really, really wild how we have different terminology for it. I'm not opposed to using the word pegging, by the way. I understand why it's different because otherwise we'd have to say a lot more words. Also, it's kind of like in the zeitgeist already, you know? Are we going to get rid of it now? Are we going to cancel the word pegging already? Like, you know, I think it's here to stay. And you don't have to use it if you prefer to say anal sex. Like, sometimes I just say anal sex. Doesn't matter if it's with a strap on, a penis, whatever. I just say anal sex. But for the most part, a lot of people in my audience use the term pegging. I think I even have a podcast episode about it where I'm like, God, I hate that we have the word pegging, but it is here to stay. So let's just call it what it is. It's just anal sex. You're getting dick down with a strap on, you know? Pegging in general, like, has a different process. It's sometimes harder to take a silicone toy than a penis. Like, it's not as soft. It's harder to keep that lube on a lot of the time. So I understand that there's, like, different challenges for pegging versus anal sex with a penis. And just like there's different challenges with wearing a strap-on harness versus having a penis that you're penetrating someone with. I mean, it's just different. You're not really used to having something like an appendage. There's a lot of different things. Does that mean one is better than the other? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Spoken as someone who loves strap-ons. Like when I was with my ex-girlfriend, that was definitely, I'm not gonna like talk too much about our sex life, obviously, but it was just one of those things where I was like, I hope whoever invented this just had like a cold pillow every night, just was pampered, loved as the little ingenue that they were, because how cool is that, you know? A little appendage that you get to swing around. It's so funny. But yeah, back to the prostate. Oh my God, I always get distracted by lesbian sex. What is wrong with me? I wonder. Back to the prostate. Yes, I think a lot of people are really confused by it, put off by it, and they don't have to be. Just take it really slow. If you are putting a finger up there, move it around in a sexy way. Don't wiggle around like a little worm. You know, just act like how you would like it if it was inside of you. You can do really slow back and forth motions. You can also kind of keep it in place and then just rock your hand. So it's just putting pressure up and then down, depending, I guess, on what position the receiver is in. But for example, if they are on their back, you can kind of just put a little bit more weight into your wrist and then move your wrist up. So you're not really having to go back and forth with your finger. You are moving your hand and your wrist. Some people also put the other fingers and kind of press against the perineum to create more of that pressure and then just kind of ease that pressure and push it back and forth. And then some people do prefer that kind of come here or like tapping motion and just play around with different depths, different rhythms. But in general, it's always good to go slow. If you are like a seasoned finger up there type person and butt plugs are something you've tried, but they don't really do the same thing, they make these prostate shape, like these things that are in a perfect shape to tap on the prostate. They're usually called like P-spot stimulators or just prostate stimulators, I guess. But they have a little bit of a curve. They have this little like hook almost. So that's something that you can play around with. And I know this does not need to be said, but it doesn't change your sexuality because you like getting your prostate touched. Can we get over that already? I mean, you would hope people would be over that by now, but apparently not. People in general expect these things to be like special buttons that you press. They always ask me, oh, can you do an episode about squirting, or can you do an episode about this or that? And it's like, people don't, they want shortcuts, and I understand why. I mean, we're busy. Life is short. I get it. But I also just want to make sure people understand that sometimes it's not about techniques or about special finger movements and stuff like that. Sometimes it is, of course. Like, basically, sometimes learning a new technique can be like mind-blowing to somebody, and when you use it on them, and it's like really exciting. But in general, what I'm trying to say is that sometimes I just want everyone to kind of take a moment and ground themselves and be present in the moment when they're doing new things with partner, or they went and they learned this thing. Because just because I do it a specific way on the model, like the, not the model, like living model, but on the vulva model, just because I do it a specific way doesn't mean that your girlfriend is gonna come because you're doing it that way. You also have to work alongside that person and like do it the way that they enjoy it. And don't get frustrated when it's like, well, I did all of this stuff and nothing's happening yet. Yeah, that's okay. Shit happens, you know? It's not gonna be like you press the prostate and then like his life has changed forever, or their life or her life or whatever. It's not, that's not how it goes. It's not these special buttons you press and then it's the orgasm vending machine, right? And we know that with the G-spot, the A-spot, the P-spot, whatever spots you want to call these things. We know that to be the truth in terms of there is no magic button. I guess the clitoris is kind of a magic button. And people will always say like, yeah, like it's a magic button. If I'm not close to coming, if you touch, if you put a finger up in my butt, I'll come. Like stuff like that people talk about a lot. But in general, I'm saying don't expect an outcome, you know, just explore. Don't expect explore. That's something that maybe I should, well, that can definitely get twisted around on me. But in general, just try different things. Try new stuff. I think it's so fun when people take the things that I've taught them and interpret them differently in new ways and play around and just explore and find the thing that makes them feel really good. I think a lot of us do too much, too soon, too fast. And why not just take it down a notch and like be present with yourself? Because this also has to do with like when you are solo and you're doing things on your own. Why not, you know? Be present with yourself. Do it for yourself. Okay, last one. Adding a textured sleeve to my boyfriend's penis. Oh, okay. Adding a textured sleeve to my boyfriend's penis. I got this as an add-on with some sex toys I ordered online. Is this supposed to go around his penis? It has little nubs on it. It's a silicone sleeve. Will it feel good? Will it come off inside me? Help, what do I do? Okay, so these little textured sleeves can feel really, really nice, but, and this is a big but, I don't usually recommend them because usually they're made of this like weird stretchy material that isn't silicone or isn't fully silicone and can feel really weird and have this weird like film that comes off and kind of gets stuck inside of you, which is no bueno, but also because it is porous and can grow bacteria. And germs love when things are porous and wet and full of bacteria. So let's just make sure that if we are using these things that they are silicone and they're body safe. The nubs can feel really great for some people. Some people are like texture lovers. Other people are like, oh, I don't know, it just like irritates me. You're gonna wanna use a lot of lube with these things. They are meant to be used when they are squishy and gushy, because otherwise when you're adding texture, anytime you're adding texture, you're also increasing the risk of adding friction, which is a no-no, especially in the vagina. So, but also in the anus, I mean, it can cause some pretty intense bleeding, honestly, if you're adding a lot of texture. So just be careful with that. These are fun. People sometimes wear them on their fingers. There's even a glove that you can wear that you may have seen in the BDSM section at Loste when I worked there, like this glove where each finger had like a different textured thingy on it. There are some people that just love exploring different sensations inside of them, and that can be really cool. If you're using too much lube, sometimes it loses the sensation. So just apply a bit and then add more as needed, obviously, but sometimes if it gets too wet, you don't feel anything inside of you. In general, these textured little nubs can feel good, but some people don't feel it at all. And it's not because there's something wrong with them necessarily, it's just because they have more perception of their sensitivity on the outside. So try also touching your clit with it. Try to run it around on your labia, your vulva. Try giving a hand job with one of these on. Sometimes that can be really fun. Explore. I mean, sometimes people are really hesitant because they're like, what do I do with it? I need instructions. But if you understand how you use it in a body safe way, then you can play around a little bit, as long as you're not putting it from hole to hole, you know, or doing something like unsafe, like it could get stuck in your anus if it's like attached to a toy, obviously. But, you know, other than that, play around. I think in general, that's such a good rule of thumb. Like, if you got a sex toy and you're like, how do I use this? What do I do? It's like, use it on other parts of your body. Play around. Like, some people don't realize, for example, if they have a suction toy that they use on their clit all the time, have you ever used it on your nipples? Well, what's stopping you? You know, like, what? It's amazing. Try it out, especially if it has like the broader opening on a low setting with some lube. Like, why not? Why not? Oh, it's because I'm doing it to myself and that's weird. Okay, who is watching you right now? Who's gonna know? You know, it's just you. It's like we have this, you know, we spectate ourselves and we definitely judge ourselves a lot, but just put that aside for a little bit and figure out what feels good and what's fun and how to enjoy it. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed this little episode, this cozy little episode in my bedroom. Side note before I go, remember that episode. I'm talking about the OG followers here, right? Remember that episode that was on my old site about the hottest things that people have said to you in bed? Yeah? Well, I'm redoing it. And it will be available right here for everyone to listen to. So I'm collecting more answers. I want new ones. I want fresh ones. I want spicy ones. So tell me the hottest thing or the hottest things that you've heard during sex, initiating sex, about your sex life, or sexting in an anonymous link box, which will be available on my Instagram for a very short time. So go, 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 submit your answer as soon as you hear this. It's going to be an NGL link, the Not Gonna Lie. If you don't want to be anonymous, and you just want to DM it to me or email it to me, you're welcome to do that as well if you have a longer answer. But I'm really looking forward to these replies. Oh my God, this episode was one of my favorites to do. So I'm excited to redo it with spicier questions because I think it's going to be incredible. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. You can check out my links, of course. You can use the code BBIRNA at Unbound Babes and the same BBIRNA at Fur. And I have some more cute little codes coming soon, but I'm sending you all my love all the way from here in DC. Thanks so much for listening.